Hello, I'm Robert Bound and welcome to the Monocle Culture Show. On the programme today, sharks. As we hit silly season, it seems only right that we should get a brand new shark movie in cinemas. This genre of sea-based beasts has a long history of B-movie-style filmmaking, combined with all the energy and one-liners of an action thriller, plus swimwear. The result is often mediocre, and many argue that no good shark movies have been made since Jaws. But that doesn't stop directors from having a crack at it, and this summer's offering is The Meg. So to see if this one has any bite, I'll be joined in the studio today by the film critic Tim Robey and Monocle's own shark fanatic, Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Stay tuned, let's dive in. Naval Captain Jonas Taylor, played by everyone's favourite action man, Jason Statham, is on a mega mission. A few years before, he had to abort his duties and abandon his crew after an encounter with a 70-foot creature from the depths of the Pacific Ocean, a claim which many found difficult to believe and ultimately cost him his job. But now he's received a call that a submersible has sunk to the bottom of the ocean, and who's on board? His ex-wife, of course. In order to save her and her crew, he must face his past fears and discover whether the presumed extinct megalodon really is lurking nearby.
Fossil.
Thought to have been extinct for over 2 million years.
Wrong.
My God.
It's a megalodon.
It's a megalodon, hence the name, the Meg. Okay, so we've all seen this movie in various states of wetness and dryness at some point during the last week. Do we dare dip our toe back into the water after going to see the Meg, Tim?
If you mean, do we want to go and see it again? No.
Is it going to put you off swimming? Because this was the great thing with Jaws. Is it an effective horror? Is it an effective chiller?
Yeah, swimming is my main form of exercise, and I'm going to keep it up, I must say. And this film has not dented my enthusiasm for it in the slightest. We've had Mega Shark versus Giant Octopus. And here we have Mega Shark versus Jason Statham. What could go wrong, seemingly? Unfortunately, the answer is everything. Everything goes wrong.
Yeah.
It's such an ugly mess, this film. And like, so rarely has such a promisingly silly concept yielded such a grindingly dull film. I sat there just thinking, oh, you've blown this. And you've let Statham down because he, you know, it's not really his fault. He would have signed on thinking, oh, this could be great. This could be, you know, Jaws meets Deep Blue Sea meets whatever. And none of those, you know, those ones, I think, all have entertainment value. Even the Jaws sequels, many of which are very poor, are better than this. Deep Blue Sea, which we'll talk about later, is a hoot, despite being ridiculous in the extreme. This film is just botched, I think. And I just found all the attempts at kind of comic relief and the tone just was really awkward and embarrassing and cringy, rather than something you wanted to celebrate and kind of get in on.
Okay, well, we'll kind of break down the bones, the cartilage of this fishy monster in a minute. Fernando, are you kind of scared of the Lido now after seeing the Meg, or will you be jumping into the ocean with abandon?
Listen, I'm always scared of the Lido and of the ocean
it's
as well.
It's just a piece of, it's just fine, it's just a piece of seagrass touching your leg, Fernando.
But you know, I'm kind of a paranoid person, and I used to swim a lot in the sea in Brazil, but you know, I still go swimming, so I'm not that scared that I don't go there. But every time, sometimes I have to come back to the boat or to the land, because I say, oh my God, there's a shark running after me. And I think everything's a shark. Sometimes they're just some ray, just shadows, rays or fish. But I have to agree with Tin as well. I mean, I had high expectations about this film. I'm a massive fan of shark films and monster films, and I was like, okay. I mean, they spent $150 million to do this, and they had Jason Statham, which I find is quite sexy as well. And I was like, well, there's everything to be amazing. But I mean, even the visual effects, I was disappointed. I mean, I think it was CGI, right? And it's not scary, because clearly you see that there's no interaction between the shark and the actors, and I think that was quite a disappointment for me.
I can't believe when you told me it was 150 million, because it does not look anywhere near that expensive. It's not what you would call state of the art. I would have guessed like 65.
The artwork is great. I mean, the posters are amazing, and I think the more I saw the posters, I was like, well, that's going to be good.
It's a marketing campaign lacking a movie,
yes,
basically, behind
that's
it.
That's a very good point. I mean, it's a funny one, right? I wonder where Jason Statham's, you know, presumably got a new Maserati out of it.
At least one, yeah.
But you're right. It seemed difficult to find where the budget was kind of spent. I want to kind of go back to the kind of source material for this. What's the premise? Where does the megalodon come from? So this is a prehistoric shark, the biggest thing that ever roamed the seas, the biggest thing that wasn't a mammal that ever roamed the seas, and something about a kind of chink in the kind of magma of the earth spat it back out of prehistory.
It's just all very woolly, isn't it? And all of the kind of pseudoscience exposition delivered largely by the Chinese cast and in kind of quite sort of strained, weird, crazy, torturous accents is quite hard to take seriously in the slightest, but also quite hard to take comedically either.
Yeah.
You're just stuck with it.
Yeah.
And you just think, okay, so there's this super big, very old shark now, which is meant to be much scarier than your average shark. But then you think, I think some of the best shark films that we'll probably talk about are just like a shark and a person, you know, The Shallows, Blake Lively, in the water, one shark, that's all you need.
What did you say the name of this place was?
This is paradise.
Yeah, so there's something about scale here, right? And I looked over someone's shoulder on the tube this morning looking at the metro, and they'd done a how likely are you to get eaten by a shark thing. But it had the kind of classic, it had the swimmer, then it had something that was like Jaws underneath the swimmer, and then it had the Meg underneath Jaws, ready to gobble them all up. It seems less scary if there's no... It seems less scary the larger it is, almost, somehow, because it's somehow less realistic. Did it feel like that to you? The fact that the bigger this thing is, not necessarily the scarier it is.
Absolutely. I mean, it feels sometimes if you have a megalodon in front of you, you can even swim in his mouth and just wait there until he opens again, and because it's so big, you know, it's so like...
And the shark has no stealth in this film.
Yeah.
Because it's so enormous that you know where it is from miles away, you know. It can't sneak up on you.
I felt that there was a bit of jeopardy lacking in this as well. As you say, there's no sort of stealth. It's suddenly...
Yeah, classic.
There's a bit where the daughter... runs off to play in this sort of underwater research place, and she goes off to play, and suddenly the shark bangs into the glass as she drops her toy, and there's a classic horror movie.
It's a good shot actually. That one, I thought that's the only one. But then you were talking about lack of jeopardy. Absolutely. Halfway through the film, Statham is the one given the task. They briefly say they're going to do draws for it, but then he's like, "No, I'll do it." He has to go and like shoot a sensor into the shark's fin so they'll know where it is. So he has to go out on his own on a cord out there to shoot it, but then it realizes where he is, and then they're trying to pull him back in. Literally no suspense to that sequence. There's no way Statham is going to be eaten 45 minutes into his own film. You know he's going to survive, so what's the point? Send someone else out, and that scene would have a lot more tension built into it. It's just kind of basic errors like that.
Are there bits, if there is such a thing as the shark canon, the sort of shark horror canon, what are the kind of key things we need? Suspense, we need jeopardy, we need the scent, we need to find presumably the idea of deep water or just water scary, and wondering, as you were saying, Fernando, when you go swimming, it's that thing of wondering what's beneath your feet. I didn't get any of that with this. It was like the sea is huge and the only terrifying thing in it is the shark. The water itself didn't sort of hold any peril.
I think you either need holiday makers or science, and this has both. So there's a sequence near the end which is a little bit more promising than some of the others, where it comes at the beach and there's like thousands of people out there swimming on their inflatables, which is very much like the kind of 4th of July sequence in Jaws. But then also you've got the underwater facility where they're studying God knows what, and that's like Jaws 3, and it's like Deep Blue Sea, and you've got the shark attacks the facility, the high-tech facility, and not all of their, you know, kind of super-duper double glazing, quadruple glazing can stop the shark from kind of smashing through. So it ticks those boxes, but in the most lazy way, I think.
To be fair, that scene on the beach where there's a lot of holidaymakers like enjoying themselves potentially is one of the best of the film. It could have been so much better. I did like the colors, you know, because I think the film lacks a little bit of color as well. And finally delivered a little bit. But I think, as you mentioned before the show started, in there was a lack of gore as well. But I think that was strictly because they didn't want, you know, for the film to be, what was the name?
An R rating, yeah. So exactly. I think they're worried about it. Because if you spend that amount of money on a film,
people have got
you
to
don't
go
want it to
it,
be an R in America because, you know, you've got to get the kids in. But you also, from a shark film, you really want some evidence that, you know, there are limbs being cut off somewhere, or there's something going on in the shark's teeth, and it's just cuts before every one of the sequences. I think they actually shot all the gore, and they did all the gore in effects, and then they just cut it out. And I think that's kind of cowardly as well. And I mean, they should have just really made their minds up much sooner about what level of film they wanted here.
Also, another thing that I didn't mind about the film is the Chinese element. I don't think it made it worse because of that. So I kind of understand. Sure, it's a co-production from a Chinese conglomerate. That's completely fine. But it's a shame, I mean, because it would be a new thing, you know, like, for example, the beach that we're mentioning, I think, I don't know exactly where it is, but, you know, mostly Chinese holidaymakers instead of Americans. I thought that was quite different and cool. But yeah, just a tiny little positive note about the film.
We're seeing a lot of this
at the
moment.
I wanted to see a bit of that culture. I wanted to see a bit of Chinese beach culture. I almost wanted a joke. You know, we've seen those pictures of the Chinese beach where there is literally not enough room to put down your bucket and spade kind of thing because everyone's so squashed on on one of these kind of artificial beaches. I wonder whether there should. I wanted a bit of a play on that, on perceptions of each other, you know, because it's a bit of an East meets West film as well, not only in terms of the funding model, but in terms of the kind of romance and in terms of all this kind of stuff. I would have loved to have seen a bit of a kind of two-speed read for this, so that, you know, so that the kids scream and the adults get a bit of sly humour.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
I mean, we're seeing a lot of this at the moment because we had Skyscraper, which was The Rock.
Oh, yeah.
Does Die Hard in Hong Kong, but bad. And now we've got The Meg.
Only bad.
Yeah, and then we've got The Meg, which is, you know, Statham does Jaws in China, but bad. And, you know, it's
three's a trend, Tim. We need to investigate this further.
Yeah, yeah. Where's Vin Diesel when you need him?
What about the idea of taking itself seriously? Jaws is obviously a suspense classic. It invented this kind of subgenre of horror, this kind of shark subgenre. And it was a good film that couldn't show the shark because there wasn't the technology to do so. So it made a kind of virtue of its sort of inability to show too much rubbery fish. This one doesn't take itself hugely seriously, but as you say, the sort of supposedly funny bits in it aren't that. How do you make the kind of showgirls of the sea? How is this possible?
Well,
Tim?
Is this where we bring in Deep Blue Sea? Because this
yes,
is
let's
what
bring
I
in
want
Deep
to talk
Blue
about.
Sea. Yeah.
So Deep Blue Sea is one of my favourites. This is from 1999. Rennie Harlin directed it, and it's a classic of the trashy shark B movie genre. You have your facility where they're studying sharks, but not only are they studying them, they've injected some sort of serum into their brains to make them more clever. So they've enabled the sharks to escape their own captivity in a sort of Jurassic Park style way.
This
it's
is
sort
in
of Jurassic
great,
Shark, actually, is
great
kind
sort of editorial sleights of hand that literally in the script just says, for some reason.
Yes, exactly. But I love the writing in it is genuinely funny.
Yeah.
And someone was having a good time writing this kind of pseudo bombastic dialogue. There's a bit at the beginning where I think Samuel L. Jackson is being shown around the facility, and one of the other characters says, beneath its glassy surface, a world of gliding monsters. And you're like, yeah, that is priceless B-movie dialogue. There's nothing here to compete with that. And we're talking
about... That also
about,
sounds like something from The Pitch.
Yeah. Oh,
rather
totally,
than dialogue. Yeah.
Just beautiful. And I think Rennie Harlin has the right touch for a kind of very silly, trashy film, which is still capable of surprising you. There's a big surprise sprung in the middle of that film where a major cast member is cut off in mid-speech by the shark, and it comes out of the blue. It's really funny. It's really bold.
Yeah.
And in The Meg, I felt as though the setup of every single shot was such that I knew who was going to get killed next. I was like, we can see the sea out here to the right, and he's about to jump. He's about to get eaten. Every point, I was guessing it. And I think Deep Blue Sea pulls off some of those moments. It's colourful. It has a really fun cast. LL Cool J is really funny in it. And there's an amusing...
Saffron Burrows.
Saffron Burrows, the amusing thing
a sort
with
of anti-heroine in the end, isn't she?
And the crazy thing with her in terms of like tweaking your film to make it work for your audience, which they failed to do for The Meg, really, is that the audience, when they tested Deep Blue Sea, hated her character so much that they had to reshoot it so that she would die at the end. She's meant to be the heroine originally.
That's quite, yeah, exactly. Yeah. As I say, she turns out to be the
but, you know, give the audience what they want.
Shall we dip our toe into the deep blue sea for a second?
A team of specialists is working against the clock.
Did someone order the fish?
On an experiment to benefit mankind.
Sharks never show any loss of brain activity as they age.
We're this close to the reactivation of a human brain cell.
But before they can save millions of lives...
Tell me I didn't see that. They recognize that gun.
It's impossible. Sharks do not swim backwards. They can't.
They'll have to find a way to save their own.
Yeah, fairly amusing camp. Someone ordered the fish.
Oh, it's great. And I love Samuel Jackson going, the shark just beat through the door. They can do that. Stuff like that. I mean, I just think it gets it right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm reading a review of this one this morning. Some reviewer had included the fact that a shark switches on an oven.
Yes, it does.
In the film.
Yeah, and Cool J is stuck inside the oven at the time and does not enjoy being heated up. That happens.
So what does it get right then? You mentioned the director's kind of got that sleight of hand or that balance of being able to do the kind of camp and ridiculous, but also moments of kind of actual fright and horror and all the rest of it.
That's it. And it's a disaster movie as well. There's a great bit in the middle where everything blows up and goes from the frying pan into the fire, essentially, and half the cast get frazzled. He's good at that. He just knows how to sort of step it up, keep you entertained. The cast are just on much better form in it as well. They're having a much better time. They seem to be enjoying themselves. I thought in The Meg they just seem like bored and desperate most of the time. It's sort of like, oh, how much more of this is there? Which is often the way I felt. It's a very oddly structured film, The Meg.
Yeah.
About halfway through, I was like, oh, is that it? I think it might. Yeah, I'm done with it now. I'm very happy. Oh no, there's another whole hour.
Yeah,
and that's not very satisfying as a viewer. I think
it's quite a long film. It's almost 2 hours long. It's a long one.
Keeps bringing on another Meg, basically. It's like, oh, there's another one now. Okay, fine. For reasons that you don't particularly understand. For reasons. Yeah.
For some reason.
Yes, exactly.
The classic. What was the atmosphere? We can talk. We went to see a really good screening of it, a press screening at Brockwell Lido down in Brixton. And I felt rather sorry for the organisers of the event, film notwithstanding, the fact that it was kind of a washout. It's obviously not rained in London in 3 months, and then the heavens sort of chose to open. The atmosphere was a funny one, though, wasn't it? Because people had been fueled by a few drinks beforehand, and despite the rain, Faye, people wanted to have a good time. People wanted to cheer at Jason Statham taking his getting the top half of his
wetsuit ripped off. Which happened too early, in my opinion.
Right.
So what was it like, the vibe?
No, the vibe was amazing, but I think it was because of the drinks, in my opinion, because it could have been so much better. And even the scene where, you know, Jason Statham, I mean, he's a handsome guy, when he stripped it off a little bit, too early in the film. I mean, wait until more to the end, in my opinion. I think you're giving up your tricks too early.
Come out of the shower and one of the Chinese leading ladies steps into his room without realising, and he sort of does, he does a kind of a priceless, like, okay.
And there's not even a kiss. Not even something a little bit sexier.
Yeah. It was a fun, I mean, it might seem weird and glib to talk about the atmosphere in the screening, but this is part and parcel. These films succeed, or sink or swim, I suppose, by virtue of the atmosphere that they create in the cinema, because it's almost like a theatrical thing, right? Where the audience has to put in their side of it. It's not like watching Bergman.
Not quite.
So the audience has to give quite a lot back to the film, and the atmosphere in the auditorium needs to be a good one.
I'm surprised they're not. I don't think it's being put out in 3D, or is it? I mean, it should be. Yeah. There are certain moments in it which would work in 3D, or even that new 4DX thing where you have kind of wind and water blown in your face or whatever in the middle of the screening. This is the kind of film that's gagging for that, really. It kind of needs all the help it can get as well, in terms of sensation.
And we shouldn't forget that I do generally think people like to go to the cinema to see a shark film. Even the film that Tim mentioned, The Shallows, I think people were kind of surprised about the box office, but I think it was much cheaper than The Meg. But then in the end it did surprisingly well, and it stayed there on the top of the film charts for a few weeks. And it was a great film, but I think people have this kind of fascination. Otherwise, we wouldn't have films. Even 47 Meters Down, which is also fairly recent. And I must add, they're filming the sequel in Brazil. It's going to be called 48 Meters Down.
This franchise this could
time,
run and run.
This exactly. time we're taking you 1 meter lower.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, that's excellent stuff. I wonder at what number they will get fed up with... Well, maybe they'll start doing it in imperial measurements. It's equivalent of 40 fathoms down, isn't it?
I mean, listen, people love it. I wouldn't be surprised if it reached 60 or something.
Yeah. What do we think, by the way, before we're going to talk, Fernando, you've picked out a movie related to this to talk about before we finish up. What do we think about, I always thought Open Water was a really great idea and a kind of a really good subtle shark movie, which made you scared of just the water around you.
It was a good one, yeah. That and one. It was, wasn't it based on a true story, I think, Open Water, which gives it an extra little frisson.
Yeah.
I actually really like, they released a film called Open Water 2, even though when they shot it, they didn't intend it to be a sequel to Open Water, which is actually even better. The other title to it is Adrift, and it has a brilliant premise, which is that a bunch of people are on a yacht, they jump off, but someone forgets to press the button on the yacht that puts the ladder down. So they're literally just floating around, gradually drowning on this yacht for several days with no means of getting up, and they try and find various ways of kind of clawing their way back up, and it just goes from bad to worse. But that's actually very good as well, and it doesn't need a shark, that one. No shark required.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. It's shark free. There might be some sort of piranha fish or something thrown in. I can't remember.
It's probably just a piece of seaweed.
Yeah.
It's just a shadow.
Yeah.
Fernando, you wanted to talk. We talked about Deep Blue Sea. That's Tim's further reading. You have chosen Anaconda.
Yes.
Shall we peer into the mouth of said beast?
Now they are the ones being watched.
Do you hear that?
The ones being followed.
Nobody move.
The ones being hunted.
There's something down there.
That's right.
No, I really mean it.
I really mean it too.
But not by anything human.
And that proves that snakes aren't human. Phew. Finally. Finally, we've got there. That sounded like Wildlife on One. It sounded very natural history and good for the soul. Fernando, why do we love this one so much?
Well, there was a magical film for me back in the summer of 97, because I think it was one of the first films that I used my pocket money with. So that's why I used the word magical. So there's a certain importance to me. And I think after Anaconda, I realized that I love films with giant monsters, basically, you know, being sharks, spiders, or snakes, especially in the reptile area. But I genuinely thought, I watched the film recently, actually, and I don't think it aged that much. And I do like the visual effects, of course. I mean, maybe the Anaconda is too fast when she kills people. And there's J-Lo in it as well.
We
have Ice Cube and Owen Wilson as well.
Really?
Completely forgot that.
That's an incredibly strange cast.
Incredibly hammy John Voight as well.
Yes.
As sort of the human villain.
Good people.
Yeah, those four are the top line.
And they filmed in Brazil as well, where
the Anaconda lives. Production story that they, I mean, this is another one, it seems to just bedevil the genre, but they shot the film, they tested it, and the studio really hated it, and they said, just go back and do it all again. So they literally shot it all again. They went back and reshot practically the whole film. But then it became quite a big hit in the summer of 97, actually.
No, absolutely. And, yeah. You know, the reviews have been fairly mixed, but again, it was a hit in the box office. And I have to say, I mean, there's a lot of shark films, but there are not many snakes films, I have to say. So I think it felt quite different as well when it came along. I mean, think about it. Snakes on a plane, Anaconda. Yeah.
The snakes are good in water. Snakes are good in water and good on land. That's the problem with them. They are... You know, they're a fairly kind of robust sort of baddie, aren't they?
Snakes on a Plane is a good analogy for The Meg, because everyone was really hyped for that film. Mm-hmm. It was like, oh, just from the concept. Samuel L. Jackson, there's some motherfucking snakes on this motherfucking plane. We're there, right? We think this is going to be great fun.
Yeah.
And then it's rubbish. It's really bad. And I think most people were just very disappointed when they saw it. And I think they're going to have the same reaction to The Meg. It's this year's Snakes on a Plane.
It's a tough one then, because you kind of feel like you've got an audience sort of hankering for something in this great canon of sort of shark horror, of sort of shark schlock horror. But it's not that easy to do. You need, the shark needs to be the right size. You need to be scared of the water. There needs to be some peril, some jeopardy. So all these ingredients have to go in the soup. You can't just expect it to be people to kind of laugh along with the jokes if the jokes aren't there.
I think that you need a director who knows what he's doing. And they hired the guy who made the National Treasure movies, John Turteltaub. And it's just a bit stolid and turgid and old hat. You want someone who's a little bit more kind of with it. You probably want a younger filmmaker to come in and do this sort of film, actually, and really sort of strut their stuff. I liked what the director of Kong Skull Island did with that one.
Yeah.
Talking about big monsters, because it was really lively and it was really funny, and it was really, he was kind of just throwing everything into it, not just falling back on stock devices like this one does.
You need to find a balance between the jokes. I mean, of course, you need a film that doesn't take itself seriously, but we need, you know, a proper scary scene as well. And I think at the Meg, I was not scared at all. I find it so disappointing. You know, and of course, you shouldn't be scared of a giant shark that doesn't exist. But, you know, come on, I wanted some.
That's the whole point. Yeah.
Come on, some suspense, you know.
I think the, yeah, and as I said, as I asked you both at the beginning, I guess the acid test of this is whether or not it puts Tim off his kind of 7 a.m. breaststroke.
Yeah,
you know, and it doesn't, and Fernando's going to be, can't wait to get back to Brazil and jump in the ocean.
Exactly. Anacondas and sharks.
Anacondas and sharks. I want to hazard a guess that this is something to do with growing up in Brazil. In Rio, this is like the jungle encroaching on the city.
Because it's true, they exist, anaconda. So you know, that's why people are so scared of those films. You know, because honestly, you can be killed by a shark in the sea. Of course, there's a lot of statisticians saying, "Oh, but the chance of being killed, blah blah blah." We don't care. There are people that are killed, and those five people make you super scared. You know, of course, mosquitoes kill more people. I don't need to know this information.
And as it stands, there are far scarier things in Hampstead Men's Pond than the Meg. It's got to be said.
On that one, I think we can leave it there. That, Sally, is all we've got time for. If we haven't put you off seeing the Meg, we would recommend perhaps take some rosé to the cinema, get in the mood. Then the Meg is out in cinemas now. Thank you very much to my guests today, Tim Roby and Fernando Augusto Pacheco, and to my producer, of course, Holly Fisher. Join us again at the same time next week. But for the time being, I've been Robert Bounds, and thank you very much for tuning in.